it is easy to fall into that shiny object syndrome and hear about a technology that's really cool, but is it going to solve a problem that you really have or kind of add to the overall landscape?
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass. I'm thrilled to be joined by Elizabeth Irvine, VP of Marketing and Customer Success at MarketMuse today. We're going to discuss AI, customer success, and marketing working together, and even being an introvert. It's going to be a winding conversation, but as always, a fun one and a helpful one. Elizabeth, thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Awesome. Well, we are big fans of MarketMuse. We've gotten to know your team and your technology pretty well. But before we dig into the conversation, Elizabeth, I'd love in your own words to share a little bit about yourself, your background, and what led you to MarketMuse, and a little bit about MarketMuse as well.
I started out in marketing, writing email copy all day, every day for white papers. I wish that were an exaggeration, but it was just dedicated email copy all day. And it really helped me get close to my customers, understand what they were really looking to buy, how to make something that may not be super exciting to everybody, really exciting to them. And great storytelling is really fundamental to marketing. So that really carried me through expanding to other parts of digital marketing, event marketing. Right now I lead marketing and customer success, like you said, at MarketMuse. And I previously worked with one of the co-founders at TechTarget, where I was writing all of those emails. And I had that foundation of understanding what's required to build that full customer journey from a content perspective and engagement perspective. And what MarketMuse was doing was really exciting to me. And so I was drawn to the technology and helping other people build those really effective content strategies.
That's really cool. I feel like a lot of times marketers are attracted to a business because of brand, but it was actually the technology that attracted you to MarketMuse. I think that's telling in and of itself. That's pretty cool. This is the Content Cocktail Hour. We always like starting by asking our guests, what are you drinking nowadays?
Ever since a trip I went on with my husband to South Africa, a Pinotage is my favorite because it's a very specific grape to that region, a combination of grapes to that region. And it's very smooth and rich. It's hard to find here sometimes, but when I do, I'm very happy.
I'm not a big wine connoisseur. I've got a few obscure ones I like myself. But so is that a dry wine, a sweet wine? What are we talking about here? You sparked my curiosity.
It's not dry, but it's closer to a Pinot Noir. Very rich and smooth, which is dangerous.
Very cool. Well, there you go. I've already learned something, and we haven't even started talking marketing yet. So I love that. Well, let's dig in. So you mentioned MarketMuse a little bit. You mentioned the technology. I've liked in getting to know you all that MarketMuse was doing AI before it was cool to do AI. And I think there's, in this generative AI world, so many of us, myself included, you know, are more keen to the generative AI use case. But really, there's a lot of things AI has been doing prior to generative AI and can still do that's not just creating copy or creating something, right? So I'd love to hear kind of your perspective. And I know you and I, we're not the right technical resources to go too deep into the weeds on this, but I'd love to kind of hear your perspective on this AI. I hate it. I'm going to use the word. I hate it. But the AI evolution that we're in right now.
Yeah, MarketMuse uses machine learning and natural language processing within our technology. It helps our customers figure out how concepts relate to one another. And that's how they can build more effective clusters and build authority in the areas that they care about. So it extends beyond keyword research and really figuring out how topics relate to one another and telling that broader story. And I think generative AI, because it was so accessible through ChatGPT, it ended up becoming synonymous with AI, but there are so many other applications of it. And we've been obviously using our own technology for a long time and using other technology that helps repurpose content like Descript, where it helps you turn video into text, and they probably use some similar technology to what we use to help make sure that they're pulling out the right words and eliminating all of the ums and ahs and really annoying filler content that makes it hard to take a full transcript and turn that into content. I think that what marketers should think about when they're looking at AI or any technology is really what problem you're trying to solve, what outcome you're trying to get to. It is easy to fall into that shiny object syndrome and hear about a technology that's really cool, but is it going to solve a problem that you really have or kind of add to the overall landscape in your MarTech stack, which could help, but I don't know about you, but tech stacks can get out of control really fast. So really understanding what problem you're trying to solve and the outcome you're aiming to get is the place to start. And it could be an AI tool. It could be some automation. It could be starting from scratch and figuring out what's really needed to make something more efficient.
Yeah, no, I've never had a tech stack get out of control. Not me. In your day-to-day as a marketer, is there a emerging use case or use case you found yourself going, like, are you using AI in your day-to-day outside of the Market Muse product? What are you using, enjoying, or maybe not doing with AI that is new since kind of this generative AI explosion?
I don't know if there's anything brand new. I've tried it for social and didn't really like it. It wasn't in our voice, even if we put the parameters in. It's actually easier to write that than other things. I think our favorite generative AI use is summarizing content and putting that into some social copy or maybe email copy. Definitely transferring video to text is probably like the biggest pain point that we were able to solve, because we want to create more video and have a lot of video, but being able to repurpose that easily is now something that we can do. I'm looking more at automation though, and figuring out how to take disparate data sources or third-party data sources and put that to better use for nurturing prospects or reaching out to prospects or understanding where my customers fall in their journey and how to serve them the right content, because they're often forgotten. As marketers, we're so focused on pipeline because that's often where our numbers lead to. That's where a lot of my attention is going right now. I'm spending a lot of time in Zapier and Make and seeing what I can put together to solve some of those resource challenges.
Yeah, that's cool that you're using it for like net new incremental value as opposed to just doing something you're already doing faster or something like that. Your experience around writing and kind of content and copy is similar to, I would say, what we've had is it might help like get you started, but then the finished product, like no matter how good the brand voice is or how good the AI tool is, it just still doesn't feel quite right. And I'm not sure if that's a psychological thing or an actual like product that's being delivered thing, but sounds very similar to our experience.
Yeah.
You made the perfect segue there for me, and I'm just going to roll right into it. But you mentioned marketers often measured by pipeline and new business and how important customers are. I think customer marketing can be one of the most like fun roles when done well. I think it can also be really challenging. I think a lot of times under-resourced internally. You're now leading customer success and marketing. You were just leading marketing and have now taken on the customer success function as well at Market Muse. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and what that's been like as you've had to kind of broaden your periphery on the entire business from marketing to marketing and CS?
I've learned a few things. It's been about a year. And I learned that I was a little further away from my customers, not my audience, but my customers than I thought I was. Because you can listen to calls and you can listen to a synopsis from the teams of what's going on, but it's really different when you're spending that time with them. And that was one of my first priorities, having not made that FaceTime with customers, was to create that FaceTime and build relationships. And I realized as a subsequent side effect of that, that I hadn't been training people well enough when they came on. So as a leader and creating an onboarding for teammates coming on, training them about the market and about the personas and their journeys, their challenges, we would usually spend an hour on it. And that was kind of it. And maybe they would read stuff. I would give them resources. Seeing what I've learned now and understanding what I used to do, I was like, whoa, I was very underserving my teammates coming on, because they're coming in to serve a really specific function and may not have that subject matter expertise that other folks on the team might. And I feel as marketing is meant to be very close to the audience and the market and understand what's going on, it's our responsibility to make sure everybody has that context and they can go into every customer call and feel confident about answering questions and address challenges that they may have in their job in general and not just help show them how to do something in a platform.
That's so good. I've shared this anecdote a few times, but at my previous company, I led marketing and sales dev, all new business focus, right? And I guess customer marketing was in there somewhere. The biggest learning that I had in starting, founding a business and leading a business, I loved founder-led sales. I loved acquiring our first customers. And I was like, oh, the CS thing is like easy. I'll just tell everybody yes, and then I go figure it out, right? And I could not have been more wrong about something than I have ever been. That was the thing that I learned so much. I had just like totally made all the wrong assumptions about what customer success was and how to build those relationships, how to make the most of those relationships. Still learning a lot today. I'm very fortunate. We've got a great CS leader now, but that was a eye-opening experience for me. And I realized in my previous marketing roles how much I had underserved our CS team and thus our customers as well. So your role is now defined by customer success and marketing, but I'd imagine there's a lot of marketers out there who obviously their role is just marketing, right? But you mentioned kind of learning all the steps you took initially to get closer to your customers. What about for a marketer who obviously isn't over the CS team or is working alongside of a CS team? What would you recommend to them? How do they create that customer closeness, even if it's not specifically their role or what they own?
I would try to allocate a certain number of hours a week to joining those customer calls alongside the prospect calls because they're very different. The customers, they don't have a different agenda, but it's a different purpose to the calls. I think when you're being sold to you, there's a dialogue, but it's a different story. It's a different conversation. And I would spend as much time with the customers as possible, not necessarily to address their direction as a customer, but there isn't a time when I'm on a customer call where I don't think about content that we could create that could help them. And as on the marketing side, that's something that you can control. And you can create recommended nurtures that customers could go into. So for example, there's a certain part of our platform that's very robust and it's a little harder to learn, but it's insanely powerful. And we have a different nurture stream for customers who are using that in conjunction with the more user-friendly, ubiquitous applications than those that are only using those. And so we have different pieces of content, different nurtures that they'll go into to try to show that value. And if I hadn't heard why they weren't using it and what challenges they were facing, we probably would have approached it differently and may not have had the same impact. I think that's the biggest thing, is just to really hear it from them. There's so much context that can be lost when it's sent from a summary or even in Salesforce or kind of person to person. And hearing the words that they're saying, I'll often go onto the site and change something on the site while on a customer call.
Wow.
Because I think that you want to use their language and how they're framing it, because you often get so close to your product and your internal jargon, especially on the marketing side. We fall into it so easily. I've done it. And hearing it from them is going to make sure that you're going to be more relevant.
That is so good. I love something I was thinking before you even said you're making these updates to your website during call, is like how much faster marketing can move because you're getting that constant kind of feedback loop of customer, like you might be saying one thing, but a customer's hearing something different. And now you're hearing how they're saying it back to you. I think that like it's just going to accelerate how quickly you can iterate and improve on marketing. And you're taking it to the extreme by making it literally real time on website pages.
Not every time.
And I think that underscores also the importance of using their language. We do this all the time. Like at The Juice, we're like, oh man, we get so enamored with like a new or a specific feature in our product. And like we sometimes like forget about some of the basic things we do really, really well. And like, that's what a customer will say is so cool. We're like, oh yeah, we don't even give ourselves enough credit for doing that thing because we're so enamored with the newer, I don't know, maybe sexier stuff. But I think, yeah. Hearing them and using their language and just that feedback loop, that's all so good. I was going to ask, has leading customers made you a better marketer? That's kind of a softball question. I'm going to assume that answer is yes.
Yes.
I'm going to like maybe pry a little bit deeper on that and then try to frame it up as a better question. Has it changed how you, because you mentioned earlier measuring marketing from a new business and pipeline perspective, has the managing customers, has that changed how you're measuring marketing success at all?
I don't know if it's changing how we're measuring the success. I don't know yet. I'll say that. But the impact that marketing has had a better, I've had a better appreciation for it, including the opposite side of where we were lacking for so long. Knowing also how hard it was on the CS side. So how many times have you thought, why can't we get more case studies? And it's so easy to go from one call to another and just switching and context switching. And even though there's great stories everywhere, you have to continuously pivot throughout the day. And that's a lot harder than I thought as well. That was one learning where I'm like, I appreciate why it was so hard to get stories. But I also write them down and record them as much as I can, even if it's just a quote for internal validation. In terms of impact and revenue, though, I think it's probably less monetary and more having a deeper insight and deeper understanding for the full customer journey and life cycle, because marketers are often so focused on pipeline, as they should, because it's often where their goals kind of stop in the grand scheme. It's hard to see beyond that. And how do we create an environment where there's incentive around renewals and expansion? So that's something that I'm trying to focus a lot on right now is our biggest line item is customers. So why aren't we focusing on nurturing them and prospecting more into those companies and helping them grow? So we've kind of shifted our priorities a little bit on the marketing side and when we're spending our time, naturally, because I'm at the helm of both of those, but I think I would do that anyway now in moving forward and understanding how marketing can influence upsells and expansion as well as bringing in new business.
I love that. You've inspired some actions I think we're going to be taking on our side to make sure marketing and CS are working closer together. And I'm sure the listeners have probably been inspired by this as well. I could geek out over this conversation all day. I think it's so cool. You mentioned something though, and you and I talked a little bit prior to hit record here. And so I kind of appreciate you being open to this conversation, but we've crossed paths a few times on the event circuit. And I remember we were both at CMO Summit recently and we were chatting and you said, I just need to go recharge. Like I'm an introvert. I need to go like catch my breath before we go into kind of sessions or whatever it is. I just think that's really interesting. You mentioned FaceTime with customers and kind of getting out and spending time with customers. I think a lot of marketers, maybe myself, are more extroverted. Like there's this trend right now of getting your personal brand out there and being an influencer and people buy from people. And I think that's all valid and real. But how has like being introverted kind of impacted positively and maybe challenges? Like I feel like that's a little bit unique. And I'm sure we have listeners who are introverts. Kind of what encouragement do you have for them in this very noisy space that we're all in right now, how to actually use that introverted style and really turn it into an advantage?
Yeah, I struggled for a long time. I would often intentionally kind of fade into the background, especially at bigger companies where it was easier to do that. I think forcing myself to, I was in an enterprise. I worked at Gartner for about a year and a half and then completely pivoted to a 9-person company. And now I'm at Market Muse, which is also relatively small too. And so there's a forcing mechanism of putting yourself into situations where you can't hide. And that was something that helped me build more of the confidence, more of the readiness to do some of the things that would have made me a lot more uncomfortable a few years before. I still struggle with turning red. I'm pretty sure I'm red right now. And, a little shake, like all the physical stuff. But I think that happens to most people anyway. But I think it's very mental. Yeah, like that's where it was. I remember mentioning that now, just kind of like, I need a minute after all of this networking to just sit at the table and breathe a bit before learning some more things. And I think it's understanding yourself and what you need to either prepare for something or come down from something. I even need it personally, I have two young kids at home, and it's a lot of non-personal space. I have two toddlers, and so like Sunday evening, I'm like, I just need to be by myself and not be talking to anybody. So I think understanding yourself, and that was something that it took a little while for me to see that, and putting myself into situations more and more will make that a little less scary and a little more, I don't know, regular. So like LinkedIn posting is something that I'm trying to do, trying to be better about. And I spend probably far too much time on every post and read it. I even put it through ChatGPT. I'm like, does this cover what it should cover? Am I missing anything? Does it sound good? I don't need to do that. But kind of a nice validator. But it's also the practice. I think that's the thing that is probably what I've done more when putting myself in a situation that's a little uncomfortable. Even something like this, 6 years ago, 8 years ago, I probably would have just said no, but it's sort of what's the worst that can happen, and just keep doing it and keep practicing, and it'll soon become more comfortable.
That's really cool. And I appreciate you kind of being open to that. I think you nailed it, but I was going to say just the self-awareness to know whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, I think is a skill, right? And it allows you to be more effective because you know what you need, just like that example you gave of like, hey, I just need a minute to recharge. That's going to make me more effective in the future. And I'd have to imagine it's also a great skill set for somebody who's in a role listening to customers can actually be turned into a real advantage where you get to listen, and listening is an advantage, and then you can go act on it accordingly. So I think that's really cool. And we appreciate you joining us on the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. Well, we will wrap on our favorite question that we like to ask all of our podcast guests. What is one unpopular opinion you have in the marketing or content space?
It's an interesting one. I kind of have two.
Yeah, let's do it.
Maybe not super controversial. I don't know. It kind of depends on who you're talking to. But SEO and content is not dead. Very much not. We've seen some customers and non-customers talk about how they're moving away from content and focusing on paid. It's going to increase the investments required for those programs. You still need to send them to content and something really high quality that will earn their trust. You still need to show that you know what you're talking about, that you are a trusted solution. So by removing content from your strategy because of an impact to performance because of algorithms and changes there, oh, it's really scary to see. And I think those companies will come back to it. I hope they do, because for me, and maybe I'm biased also because of my history, but I feel like content marketing, content strategy, content everything is kind of your baseline. That's something that you have to do as a business to show your audience that you should have a seat at the table. And it's a great way for them to learn, for you to teach them for when they are ready to buy. So don't run away from content. And also personalization. I love website personalization. That one's probably a little more controversial. It's not about first name or company necessarily. I've never actually done it that way, but it's more about meeting them where they are in their journey, on their buyer journey, with the data that you have, and showing them relevant messaging and content that will make them more likely to convert.
Yes. Hallelujah, I'll say here. On both of those, I agree with you. SEO is not dead. I think it's changing, but guess what else is changing? Literally everything else. So I think that's kind of foolish. I think content is the oxygen for everything that marketing does. So I think you're right. Like the investment in content is that would cause me some anxiousness or some anxiety as well.
I'm sorry.
And totally agreed on the personalization. It's so funny. I think we as marketers, especially, we're in the same seat where we're both marketing to marketers a lot of times. And marketers see right through the hi first name and then, three generic paragraphs. Or we see that your business does XYZ. It's like, it is such a tired playbook that, like, I especially, you're not going to trick any marketers, but I think the personalization of where they're at in their journey, you know, what product suite they may be interested in, or what content piece they may be interested in based on the data that you have, I think that is extremely powerful. So I think those are maybe controversial opinions, but I'm in favor of them, and I think they should be popular.
Yay.
And I lied. There's one more question. If people want to learn more about MarketMuse or learn from you, Elizabeth, just like we have during this episode, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, MarketMuse.com, MarketMuse.com. And I am on LinkedIn. I do post there. I log in every day. I don't post every day, but hit me up. I'd love to chat.
Love that. Well, everyone, go connect with Elizabeth so you can give her the boost on all of her ChatGPT reviewed LinkedIn posts, and it'll start feeling more natural in no time. More importantly, go check out MarketMuse. They're doing really cool things. That was MarketMuse.com. We'll have all of the links in the show notes. Elizabeth, thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour. Go connect with Elizabeth on LinkedIn. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. We'll see you next time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.